Well, hate is such a strong word.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Melrose Place. Today's episode is Season 6, Episode 17, Coupe de Grace. And now, here are your hosts.
Tara Aranio and Sarah D. Bunting.
Sorry, I was just remembering a time when I was called pretentious for pronouncing it short-lived. And now here's Dave telling us about the Coupe de Grace. Bless everyone. Hi, Sarah.
Hi.
Hi, listeners. Before we get into this episode, we want to tell you, again with this, episode 139, dropping April 14th, is going to be, let's read the April 1992 Teen Beat. This is...
Oh, boy.
In the back half of season 2 of 90210, certainly when it had reached not quite peak cultural relevance, but this issue somehow is 123% Beverly Hills 90210 content. Like, you're reading a page and more of it falls out. That's not to say there's a lot of anything. It's like reading an Us Weekly where you just glance at a page and you accidentally read an article because they're each, you know, three paragraphs long. But there are a lot of photos and I think we're going to have a good time. So if you are not already in our Patreon getting these bonus episodes, now may be the time. And you can join us at againwiththispodcast.com/club. Join us at any level to hear that bonus episode this week. And there will be visual aids. That made it sound like a threat. It's not. They're going to be fun. Let's get into this episode, starting with our C-plot. Business moves are happening for both of the show's new fake companies. This distinguishes them from the old fake companies, meaning the medical practice. Let's open this story with Jennifer on her way out to work at the jazz club when clip two.
Psst. It's Mancini.
Who's there?
It's about your company. People's lives are in danger.
Dr. Mosley, is that you?
It doesn't matter who I am. I can't be connected with this, but somehow I felt I could trust you.
Fine, whatever. What lives are in danger?
Anybody fitted with your new heart valve.
What? What's wrong with the valve?
Follow the money.
Mosley, stop the deep throat act and spill.
Okay.
Okay, heart valve? Heart valve.
What?
Glovco's making heart valves now?
Sure.
Okay.
All of this is, well, whatever. I won't make these comments now, but it's just like, why is literally everything about this plotline happening off screen, basically?
Mm-hmm.
My only theory is that they were like, Charvet's got to go and he's so terrible at acting and that's why. So we're just going to like do all the plotting and have other people talk about it in scenes. It's very weird.
Yeah. Also, don't lurk in the shadows waiting to ambush women. Just don't. Or anyone, frankly. Like don't lurk in shadows. It's not cool.
Yeah. No.
To make a long story short, Craig is switching to cheaper manufacturing components on the heart valve Glovco is now making, apparently, and that makes the product less reliable. Again, I have zero memory of this clown car trying to start making heart valves. Feel like I watched the show pretty closely, but fine. Let's hear more. Clip three.
Cheap plastics in a heart valve could lead to clots, which could lead to deaths.
Oh, man.
Mr. Field has threatened me and my entire team if we don't endorse the switch.
Threatened to fire you?
That and worse. That's why we have to be careful.
Okay. Don't worry. I'll get into it right away.
Thank you. Here's all the documentation, memos, everything. And Jennifer, you're even more beautiful than I remember. In another, less dangerous time, maybe we could have something. Goodbye, for now.
Cr- Craig, what have you done now?
Okay.
Nothing that we saw. What is going on?
It is nice that, you know, fucking Willie Garson got to come back and have another moment, as dumb as this is. But, I mean, Jennifer's "oh man" in the middle of that is like, oh man, he's saying people are going to die. Like, that's what you say when you get a parking ticket. Oh man.
Yeah.
Moving on. At the jazz club, Sam and Billy are schmoozing some clients from Flash Sporting Goods, clip 4.
There is one little hitch in the giddy app, though. Fred and I were talking on the way over, and we decided to go with a celebrity spokesman.
Well, whoever you got your eye on, we'll do our best to sign him up.
Jeff Baylor. What do you think?
Tiger Woods of the minor leagues.
Bingo.
Is that a thing?
Which part?
Sporting goods company would be like, we're going after this super famous minor league guy.
I mean, no.
Okay.
I think college players now can take endorsements,
mm-hmm.
Which is, you know, good, but it's not, no.
Yeah.
Like, unless it was a really high profile guy who was in the minor leagues because he was the number one draft pick and everybody knew about him, but that's like a once in a generation player.
Right.
So basically, no.
Well, client Brett says this Jeff is being courted by every major league team. Every ad agency is also courting him, Billy says. So if the agency can't get him, they can probably get someone else, which, like, oh, gee, someone in less demand than this minor league player? Cool, sounds great. But the other client, who's not named Brett, says it's Jeff or no one as far as they are concerned, and Billy can call when he has signed Jeff and when they leave. Billy's pessimistic, but Sam, who has been in this field for about 6 weeks, just to remind everyone, sure they can get him because she doesn't know Jeff already turned down Amanda and Billy when he was a rookie and he is in opposition to endorsements on principle. And then, clip 5.
Do you even know who Jeff Baylor is?
Left fielder for the Orange County Sentinels. Last season he finished with 35 home runs and a .395 batting average. Loyal baseball fan.
I'm dying to know your thoughts on this turn.
I mean, sure. Like, if she were that up on minor league stats, she would work as a sports writer or like on the internet for MILB.org or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, that's not a thing. And I also think it's extremely weird that they just didn't give this story. I guess they couldn't, but they didn't give the story to Jennifer because Alyssa Milano, like, dated a bunch of the Dodgers back then.
Right.
And actually does know about baseball. Like, this is just, why?
Yeah. I know you're not a Sam fan, but I assume you also slightly enjoyed having her completely stomp Billy's attempt to mansplain baseball to her. Wow, you hate her that much?
Yeah.
Fair enough.
La-di-di-di. Like, I just can't. I can't.
That's fine.
With her. I mean, with that said, like, once this individual actually shows up, then my attitude towards the storyline starts to change, but we'll get there.
Oh, I'm excited. So Billy's impressed, but as he is holding Sam's hand, he notices she's not wearing her ring. She guiltily snatches her hand away as she says she dropped it down the sink. A plumber found it, but a prong was loose and it's going to take a week to fix it. And she didn't tell Billy because she knew he would be mad at her. Nice marriage. Even Billy scoffs at the idea that he would be mad, adding that Sam doesn't have to hide things from her. And I guess this exchange was here for a reason and it'll pay off later. So stand by. Back to the bar. Jennifer and Craig are in the middle of her confronting him about Dr. Mosley's allegations. If she cares about his business, she will drop it. And she reminds him it's also her business. And she approached him in confidence because she still cares about him. Like, still? Anyway, this heel turn is happening real fast. Clip 6.
If this was anyone else, I'd be hollering bloody murder.
Interesting way of putting it. Because if you open your trap to anyone,
I'll kill you.
Craig, cut the dramatics. I'm not gonna stand by and like...
I mean it, Jennifer. You say one word, and you'll be very sorry.
What?
What?
He's a murderer now? Like, where did this come from? It's so sudden.
As best as I can piece it together via the Googles, it seems that he left acting entirely at this time to pursue his pop music career in France.
Oh, great.
His country of origin.
Sure.
And I guess he was being un Bastille about it. So they were like, fine, you want to leave that badly? We're just going to do this. And then they like fired him literally into, you know, the sun. So,
yeah. Le soleil.
We.
So the next day, Jennifer finds Coop at the hospital and whistleblows about Craig. And some number of days later, Sam and Billy have spent $2,000 to attend a charity carnival where Jeff is sitting in a dunk tank. And he is played by Dan Gauthier, a.k.a. Dead Dick from 90210. And now that Sarah knows that, let's get an update on her feelings about this character and this plotline.
I was just glad to see him. That I was like, is that Dead Dick? And then I got to make a bunch of Marauders jokes to myself in my notes. You really, really have to try hard to make your own fun with these recaps at this point, folks. So that's where my head was at. But it was like, okay, that guy looks credibly like he could be a minor league athlete.
Yes.
And he is competent. Mm-hmm. But is also a like known over actor. Like his death scene was inadvertently hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always appreciated his work in a very thankless, not only section of that show, but plot line that was just very dumb and bad and had Ian Ziering angrily throwing a bong. Like, Jesus. A pot pipe?
Uh-huh.
So, yeah. I was just glad. I was glad to see him. Like, there are so many ways in which this show doesn't seem to care that just seeing a like solid B professional show up, I was happy.
Yep. I agree. I do think he has the look of an athlete too, like not just in build, but he has that like has always been cool and popular kind of face.
Mm-hmm. That swag, totally.
Mm-hmm. So Billy launches into his pitch while also pitching hearty har. Jeff is there to help this hospital not talk business. And also, clip 7.
You had a boss.
Yeah, I'll say.
For the character to be that full of like balls and swinging and bats and scoring puns is stupid, but
I don't care.
This whole plot line is stupid, and it's cuckolding Billy, and it's Billy.
That's
so
right.
Fine.
Yep. If Billy is done, he should step aside and let the next person take a shot, Jeff says. And by the way, if this guy is the kind of draw that would make him an all or nothing prospect for the sporting goods client, you would think the tank would be mobbed, but it's not. So just mentioning that.
Yeah. Also pretty sure that his manager / management team are not going to allow him to do something that could injure him. But okay. Sure.
Oh, I didn't even think of that. Yeah. So Billy just gets more balls, continuing to miss and ignoring Sam right next to him. And if you don't know where this is going, you've never seen TV before. Jeff says he will listen to the campaign idea if Sam can dunk him with Billy's last ball. Clip 8.
Well, I guess this sale's gone.
Hey, it ain't over till the fat lady sings. Take a deep breath, Jeff.
Oh, my God!
Yes!
Home run!
Oh, my God! So don't forget to call us on Monday. In high school, they clocked my fastball at 67 miles an hour. It's not bad for a girl, huh?
I mean, no. It would be even better if we'd ever heard this before.
Mm-hmm.
Are you trying to throw a crab through the wall? Like, what are you? Why is this character? Why?
Yeah. It's like, not to say that art school students can't also be athletes, but it's just not, it's not what you see often. That's all.
No.
Anywho, sometime later, Craig shows up at Jennifer's door with flowers and announces that Coop fired him earlier, but he guesses she already knew that. He asks for a vase. She stupidly lets him inside. Clip 9.
You didn't have to do that, you know.
I know. I could have saved him for your funeral. I mean, did you really think that I wouldn't know who tipped off Coop?
Just get out, Craig. I don't care where you go. Just get out.
Well, there's nowhere to go because the company owns my car and Coop repossessed it because of you. Once again, a selfish little piece of garbage has managed to destroy everything that I've created. Sorry.
Okay, how are we here again? Stop using your corporations to buy major assets, everybody. It's Peter's house again.
Oh, my God. Also, all right, apparently Sharpay's first language was not English, so maybe that explains a lot of things, and I'm sure. Sorry that it came to this with the chanteur. But, oh my God. Like, and then to have this go in this, like, scary, menacing, a tiny woman direction.
Yeah.
Like, she holds her own, but I just feel like this is way over the line. And then, well, you know, we'll get to it, but there's, like, this is way off tonally. They really must have been angry that he wanted to leave.
Yeah.
This is just so bizarre.
Right. I mean, it did remind me that, like, when he was first with Sam, there were moments where we were given to understand when they were alone together, like, she did not feel safe with him, that he was, like, sexually pushy, but not to this degree. Like, he really just attacks Samantha. That's her Who's the Boss character. He attacks Jennifer and starts, like, throwing her around so much that, like, Billy hears a glass smash and the struggle that ensues, and he runs up to intervene, yanking Craig off of Jennifer. Jennifer jumps on Craig's back as he shoves Billy into a corner, and then finally Craig just runs out like an animal while Billy and Jennifer agree he's insane, which, like, Billy, he was your best man 4 episodes ago. That's rude.
Mm-hmm.
The next day, Michael stops over for a house call on Jennifer's neck bruise, which is upsetting. He starts to say she should come by the practice later, but we'll get to it. Michael wants to go rough Craig up. Okay, probably a fair fight, honestly. But Jennifer says she and Billy handled it last night. Michael expects Jennifer to file a police report, but she figures he will be long gone by now. But unfortunately, she finds out how wrong she is when Craig sticks a gun in her back at her car that night. She somehow doesn't recognize his voice before handing over the keys and keeps talking instead of just letting him have the car. Clip 10.
All the trouble I've had is because of you and everyone else in this hellhole.
No, Craig, you've just had some bad luck, that's all. It's not too late to get your life back on track. Just don't do this.
No, it's too late. Sydney was right. You're all a bunch of emotional vampires. That's why I gotta get away from you. Goodbye, Jennifer.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I don't get it.
Well, yeah.
I guess I do get it. I just don't. Yeah, this is, even for Sharpay, this is mean
well,
to do.
Spoiler, we're almost done with this, and I'm just going to give everyone a content warning that this scene includes significant self-harm. When we see Craig next, he is parked on the side of a deserted road. Clip 11.
Couldn't do it, Sydney. I couldn't do it without you. I screwed up everything, and I miss you so much. I just want to hold you again. I just want to be with you again.
And then he looks over at the gun on the passenger seat and picks it up. And when we switch to a shot from further away, we know it so we can see the flash inside the car. And that's a series wrap on David Sharpay.
Yeah, wow.
Woof.
Yeah.
Moving on to our B plot. Taylor is still interfering in Kyle's life, now in Texas. We open this plot line with Kyle dreaming about a time in Iraq when he and Christine the Marine shared a champagne toast about their post-war plans. He is the first man she ever really loved, but just as they're about to kiss, the phone rings and wakes Kyle up. It's Mario telling him Taylor went out of town, and Kyle had no idea about it. And then we cut to the Buffalo Chip Saloon in fake Dallas. Taylor walks in and sees Nick behind the bar, and their reunion is as warm as you would expect. Clip 12.
I didn't realize the circus was in town.
He's growing on me, not gonna lie.
It's true. There was a tweet that was kept getting retweeted last weekend that was like a clown convention to be held in Florida or something. And everyone was just quote tweeting it like, looks like my exes are getting together, or like adding specific people to be like, hope you have a good time or whatever. It's stupid, but it also made me laugh. So Nick orders Taylor to leave, but she just asks him about Christine again. He still does not want to discuss her. And she brings up the Three Musketeers photo she saw, and... Clip 13.
Just how stupid are you, huh? I said get the hell out. Now, if I see you around here again, I'm gonna smash your teeth through the back of your head. You understand that?
Okay. It seems excessive, but fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Also, must every second character on this show own a bar, restaurant, or club?
Yeah.
Why is this always the default? Like, we learn more about that in this particular case, but it's always like, oh, God. Like, I understand why it is. It's mm-hmm. the same reason they expanded the Peach Pit, but it's like, guys, yeah. Really? Could you do something else? Anything?
Mm-hmm. Well, back in L.A. the next day, Amanda wakes up to Kyle keeping vigil. She worries that he's not getting enough rest. He feels lucky to be marrying her, and she assures him she will walk down the aisle. Peter comes in and they stop kissing to say they were just talking about the wedding, and then both realize they forgot to tell Peter. But he's an adult about it, saying that Amanda deserves happiness and correctly congratulating Kyle. When he leans down to kiss Amanda on the cheek, she gasps that she can feel pressure on her legs and orders
That's
him to stick
where
with-
she's feeling the pressure. Sorry.
She orders him to stick her foot. He does, and she feels it. As he calls for a neural workup, he watches Amanda and Kyle celebrating and looks stricken. Back to Dallas. When Nick returns to his apartment, Taylor's waiting for him inside in the dark, like a creep. When Taylor talked her way in, his landlord said Nick is 2 months behind on his rent, so Taylor paid it. And now that she has that over him, it's harder for him to ignore questions about Christine. Clip 14.
She's dead.
Dead? Oh, damn.
It's just a funny line delivery. That's
I mean, yeah.
So as he asks what Taylor really wants, she tells him about recent events in Kyle and Amanda's lives, including their engagement. But if Christine was the one true love of Kyle's life, Taylor wants to use her to rattle Kyle's cage. Nick believes in letting the dead stay buried, and then they just stare at each other for a while. But of course, when we rejoin them the next morning, they've apparently just had sex. Not that either of them seems to feel great about it. Clip 15.
I bet you really miss Kyle.
I mean, how could you tell when he made you wear a Kyle mask Kyle while mask. You were fucking?
He called you Kyle?
Yeah. Kyler. Nick mumbles that Kyle saved his life. He never thought Taylor or anyone else would come between them. But now look at him, lying in bed with Kyle's wife. Taylor corrects him on their status. She wishes there were a way to mend Nick and Kyle's friendship and make up for all her mistakes, but Amanda has him now, having hooked him with the money for the jazz club, which is the first Nick has heard about this establishment, because apparently the original dream was that the fellas were going to open a jazz club together. And Taylor talks up how great it is, and she says she would share her piece of it with Nick if he helps her with Kyle. Clip 16.
Nick, why do you think Kyle never mentioned Christine?
Or it tends to make you want to forget a lot of things.
He loved her?
They loved each other like no two people had ever seen. It was magic. They met on the way over to the Gulf. Christine was a Marine in the first support group.
So she died in battle?
No. Later. She lived for a while.
What aren't you telling me, Nick?
Nothing. Look, I know what last night was all about, but it's not going to work, Taylor. I might have betrayed Kyle last night. I'm not...
What? What, Nick? What else is there?
Just get out, all right? All right? Just get out. Had your fun. You've gotten all you're going to get out of me. Now, go poison someone else's life. Just go.
She will.
All right. I mean... Yeah, we'll get to it. So then Taylor's at the Dallas airport on her way out. Nick shows up and asks about the club. She looks legitimately astonished that her scheming actually worked, but she recovers, bragging about how great it is, which is why it's too bad Amanda has Kyle walking around like a castrated puppy. So Nick orders a Jack Straight and clip 17.
Christine didn't die. Her injuries were serious. She was... Her face was disfigured in the blast. And she didn't want Kyle chained to an invalid the rest of his life. She wanted to be remembered the way she was. So she made me promise to tell Kyle that she had died. Last time I saw her, she was being transferred back to the States. She covered her tracks. And I told Kyle she was dead. I hated myself every day since, but it's what she wanted. What I promised.
My God.
Well, now you know the whole truth. For whatever good it'll do you.
Well, Nick, this just might be the answer to everything.
I don't get this. Like, I don't. If her end game is to get with Kyle herself, like, why bring this other lady into it? This plot is so complicated.
Yeah. And even for Taylor, I mean, I assume we're supposed to think that she thinks that reintroducing Christine into the equation will break up Kyle and Amanda because Kyle, quote, lied to Amanda about her, even though that's technically not what's going on. And then Taylor can sort of swoop back in with the information. I don't know. I will say Nick is... Like this actor is not my favorite, and his plot lines tend not to be my favorite, but he's doing a pretty good job here with this excessively like Byzantine scheme of Taylor's.
Yeah, he is very pro for sure. Sometime later, Kyle wakes up and Amanda's crying out for Christine, and then he sees he's alone and calls for Amanda, who got herself to the bathroom with the help of a walker, which, like, that was fucking fast from Canfield toe prick to going to take a pee on her own, but great. Kyle is still too disturbed by his dream to be happy for Amanda, just falls on her looking haunted. And that night, Amanda's in bed with work, assuring Kyle on the phone that she's fine and needs him to run their club. And then she hangs up and walkers out to the living room for her briefcase, snagging the strap on the chair on their way back and tripping herself. And the walker slides out of reach, so she just starts yelling for help. And unfortunately, scenes later, Taylor is the one to hear her. And based on how Heather Locklear gets up, and you can see this in the visual aids, it's unclear exactly how Taylor is helped. Her do something that she couldn't do herself. Like, just their physical geography is weird.
Yeah. And once again, shot to hide Locklear from the sternum down. So it's like, yeah. what was the point of, like, I know what the point of this was, but still.
Yes. Anyway, as Taylor walks Amanda back to the bedroom, Amanda orders her not to tell Kyle, thus guaranteeing she will, although we're going to see in the next episode, spoiler, she won't have to, but since they're sharing secrets, Taylor's got a doozy about Christine, but they're going to have to dig into that in the next episode. Let's close it up with our A plot. Peter looks bad to Lexi's dad. Michael looks bad to hospital brass. Due to music rights issues, we've mostly been spared tootling at the jazz club, but this fake swing dance bullshit comes closer than I would like and really took me back to a moment in time. Clip 18.
The clock struck 12, but not a soul had gone. Up jumped the boy.
There's more of it. Brutal. That was as much as I could stand. So bad.
Brutal. It was everywhere 25 years ago, too.
That's it was.
So, yeah.
And not only that, Big Bad Voodoo Daddy is in the credits for this episode, but sure is not in the DVD. That's for sure.
That was big, even worse Voodoo Daddy.
That's true. After this horror, we're on the deck at the condo as Lexi brings coffee to her dad and basically recreates the unwholesome vibe of the late Armstrongs, clip 19. Ugh.
There you go. Strong and sweet. I assume that's still how you take it.
Reminds me of you. Anyway, I rarely change my habits.
Including popping in and surprising me at the least expected moments. Pleasantly so, I might add.
I'm off. Mr. Sterling, sorry I can't stay for breakfast. I got a full calendar this morning.
Ah, you go ahead. My daughter and I have some things we need to talk about.
Have a good one.
Have fun.
Mm-hmm. What are you doing with that bozo?
I mean, huh? But also, could we please stop writing these father-daughter relationships like they've been fucking? Because it's disgusting.
Yes.
Strong and sweet.
Mm-hmm.
It reminds me of you.
Uh-huh.
A beerf.
Yeah. That said, bozo, really an underrated insult, frankly.
It's true.
It's a good one. Anyway, what Lexi is doing with said bozo, indignantly, she claims she is enjoying his company immensely. Her dad thinks that she was better off with Coop, and when she mentions his affair with a patient, Thomas just shrugs that all men get stupid now and then, apart from Thomas himself, of course, and Lexi gives him a creepy, oh, you scamp smile before Thomas returns to his point. Peter is not half the man Coop is, which, Peter also sucks in the many ways we have enumerated over the years, but he is worth like five Coops. Let us be serious here.
Well, yeah. I mean, Peter sucks, but at least Peter is not putting us into a coma, unlike Coop, who is boring and schemey somehow.
Yeah. Anyway, Lexi knows her audience and says Peter is just as successful as Coop was and a lot more fun and a better doctor, as though, like, her dad cares about Peter's reviews on ZocDoc. But anyway, speaking of Coop, he parks in Michael's driveway just in time to catch Amber unloading her luggage. And he comments on how fast she left the Jazz Club the other night. And she rather unnecessarily tells him everything's great and she's moving in, actually. And then Michael comes out. You're never going to believe this. Coop is there to offer Michael an olive branch for like the 700th fucking time. They have had this conversation so like in every episode practically since they met. Honestly.
Mm-hmm.
Michael tells him to shove it, ordering Amber to stay out of it when she tries to scold him. But then she glares at him so hard that Michael backs down, shaking Coop's hand and agreeing to a clean slate, but stopping short of agreeing to dinner with Coop and Megan, but says they will all be mingling socially the next night at a reception the practice is throwing for the hospital bigwigs. Michael forgot to tell Amber about it. Whoops. But Michael assures Coop that Amber will be there. And then after Coop has left, clip 20.
Snake.
I think he's nice.
Yeah, that's what they said about Ted Bundy.
It felt obligatory.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Over the hospital, Peter's bitching to Coop about Thomas's visit. Coop advises Peter to stay on his good side. He and Thomas always got along great. And you're never going to believe this, but after going out of his way to make peace with Michael just one scene ago, Coop then goes ahead and shit-talks Michael to Peter. Clip 21.
I thought you and Monica were getting along these days.
Look, this doesn't have anything to do with getting along. One more screw-up on his part could sink all of us, Peter. But hey, you know what? I'm the freshman member of this team. I'm sure you'll know when things get to the point where we need to cut him loose.
Nobody's cutting anyone loose. Michael's a great salesman, and we may need that tomorrow. I'll see you at the staff meeting.
Is Michael a great salesman, really? Like, I feel like this isn't something we've ever seen at all.
The fact that he's still employed might suggest that he's good at selling something.
Fair. Fair. The next day, Peter is not especially pleased to see Thomas and Coop grab-assing by the hospital elevator. Clip 22.
Why didn't you tell me Coop made you a partner? Hell, you just gone up a whole half notch in my esteem.
Actually, I was...
I don't know when we can lock that game in tomorrow, but I'll call you tonight and we'll set a time.
Great. I'll keep my schedule free.
You two playing golf together?
Golf? No. Golf's for lazy men. We play tennis.
Ew! Who cares? Just take her, Lexi Senior, Lexus. Uh-huh. Like, just all of you, get goodbye.
Seriously. Thomas leaves without acknowledging Peter's goodbye, hilariously. And Peter pouts to Coop that Thomas hates him. He would also like to know how Thomas got the impression that it was Coop who brought Peter into his medical practice. And Coop claims Thomas hears what he wants to hear. Peter tells him to beat Thomas at tennis, but apparently Thomas is amazing on top of everything else, which is like such a funny, unnecessary detail, but sure. And then it's time for the reception. Lexi looks great. I regret to say. It's a really good dress and it suits her well. Megan looks stupid. You can see the two of them in the visual aids. She's got a dumb scarf on and for reasons that will become clear in a moment. And the two of them and their dates are all together when Michael enters with Amber in one of the shortest slip dresses I have ever seen. You can see this in the visual aids too. It is a nighty.
Yeah. And in later sequences, when she, you know, spoiler, crashes into the buffet table and ruins a bunch of perfectly good hors d'oeuvres.
Thank
how
you.
Dare she? Like, you see her whole ass, basically. Like, there's just nothing. Mm-mm. There's nothing between her and the world.
No. So Megan is horrified, perhaps because she's just been wildly upstaged. And she heads straight for Amber, pulls her and her quite visible nipples out to the hallway and suggests that her dress may be a bit risque for the crowd inside. Clip 23.
But Michael said it was perfect. A real turn on.
Of course he did.
But the idea here is to impress, not to titillate. I mean, you wouldn't wear that to a dental function, would you?
Why would I be at a dental function?
Well, because the other night you said you were...
A dental hygienist. Yes. But I never mix business with pleasure. This is my first one of these, actually.
Well, listen, here. This will take the edge off, kinda.
Oh, no, I couldn't.
No, please. Please, I insist. You will be so much more comfortable. Everyone will.
It's her giving her ugly scarf. It doesn't help. Spoiler. Inside, Peter whines about Coop and Thomas palling around at the hospital earlier. Lexi shrugs that Thomas and Peter will be that close soon, too. Peter's pretty sure Thomas wants to destroy him, actually, but promises to be Charlie Charming. I can't decide if I hate it or love it, honestly. Charlie Charming. Elsewhere, Coop finds Amber on her own. While Michael works the room, Coop tries to get her to relax by offering champagne, but she says she gets crazy on it, and he ignores her refusal and tops her up with a heavy pour. And you can see him watch her creepily as she drinks it in the visual aids. And once again, I thought for sure we were heading to this girl is underage, but that never happens. So weird that they're giving all these signs, but maybe that was like a stub of an idea. And then she booked a daytime soap and they were like, oh, never mind.
Right.
Later, Peter grabs Michael and orders him to look after his date, who's taken off her shoes and is basically doing a lap dance for no one in particular. And when Michael runs over, she squeals that she just wanted to loosen up the crowd. And to her credit, the two guys nearest to Michael are loving it, as you can see in the visual aids. Michael picks her up around the thighs to get her off the chair that she's dancing on. And then they both fall onto the buffet table. Totally unacceptable party foul. Perfectly good food ruined. She just giggles, and Peter and Megan and Lexi run to their rescue while Coop stands on the side looking smug that his latest fiendish plan has come to boring fruition. And the next day, Michael's staring out of the ocean when Amber creeps out onto the deck, and it is definitely sunset, so I guess he has spent the entire day in the house not speaking to her. Okay. And he lays right into her, saying her performance at the party was the last nail in his professional coffin. And she told him it was the champagne, and he left her all alone. Clip 24.
Oh, right, so it was my fault. What the hell was I thinking? Taking a bimbo to a ball. You know, trash all dressed up is still just trash.
Guy, you were the one who insisted that she start a relationship with you, and you were fine with her career. And now you're here. Like, this is on you. Leave her alone.
Yeah. Also, if anything, that improved your standing at, in various people's esteem. So shut up.
True. Over to Kyle's, where Coop is trying to talk Peter into kicking Michael out of the practice over the previous night's disastrous events. Peter thinks they can work something out with him, and then Megan's also there, finding out for the first time what this emergency meeting is about. And she is sticking up for Michael when Michael himself walks in, sees them colluding, and clip 25.
Well done, people. Coop, didn't even feel the blade till it was sawing through my carotid. And Peter, you've been off my hide ever since I took the chief of staff from you. But Megan, what's in this for you, huh?
Michael, I had nothing to do with this decision.
Oh, right. You're sleeping with this jerk, and you had no idea he was out to submarine me?
Michael, you have to admit, your behavior recently has been...
Don't you try and lecture me, you traitor. I suppose you're all feeling pretty good about yourselves right now, huh? I mean, all you gotta do is wipe the blood off the sword, and then you can enjoy a nice, quiet dinner, knowing that you've gotten rid of your little Michael problem. Well, I promise you all, your problems have just begun. A toast to old friends and new enemies. Salute you all.
Want a piece of meat, dirtbag?
Come on.
Get out of here.
Huh?
Well, that was, predictable. Megan.
Look, I'm going home, okay? This whole scene has left a bad taste in my mouth.
Phrasing? I mean, yeah. I don't care who you are, and this isn't even about her former career. Like, just don't. Just don't. But also, submarine me? Do you mean torpedo me? I've never heard that phrase before.
Yeah, no, me neither. Well, no doubt a victim of, like, close enough. People know what they meant. We're not taking it again.
That's right. So then we return the next night with Peter, Lexi, and Daddy, the last of whom bitches that his entree is overcooked. Oh, Kyle. Where's the QA? Thomas then announces that his company's opening a West Coast division and he wants Lexi to run it. And she immediately accepts and runs around the table to hug him. But, like, what about her fake design business? What about Bob? JK, I don't think Bob is still in the picture, but still.
No. Also, what business is Daddy in? Being weird?
Probably the same business that... Haley Armstrong was in, like, the business business.
The business business. Business. Business.
So, when Lexi takes off to clean up an elbow full of steak sauce, Peter tries to Charlie Charming Thomas, and it does not work. Clip 26.
You know, this is really wonderful of you, Tom. She's been talking about a career in interior design, but this is a great opportunity for her.
You're not the sharpest knife in the drawer, are you, son?
Excuse me?
You think I'm doing all this just to employ my daughter? I've done my homework on you, Doctor. You have all the morals of a rabid skunk. Since Lexi seems to have nothing better to do than to satisfy whatever carnal urges she has toward you, I'll have to put up with you for the time being.
You know, Mr. Sterling,
but once she tastes life as the head of a Fortune 500 company, she's gonna wake up one morning, open her eyes, and wonder what the hell she ever saw in a smarmy, small potatoes loser like you.
All fixed. Oh, Daddy, I'm so jazzed. I could just scream. Oh, tell me some more.
Well, the papers are all filed, Ms. Sterling. All that remains is to find the office space and start staffing. Oh.
Cheers.
I wanted to say, like, I already brought the sign on the plane.
God.
Spoiler, there's already a sign. That's the first thing they move into the new office.
Also, Daddy, I'm so jazzed. I could just scream.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, boopsie.
Yeah, that's the kind of slang my mother, bless her, still uses. And I don't think Lexi was supposed to have been born in, you know, the 1950s. But anyway. Elsewhere, Coop comes to pick Megan up for their date. As soon as he lets us know they're going to a restaurant he has not tried before, we know they're actually not going to anywhere, because if they were, they would just be headed to Kyle's. And sure enough, Megan accuses Coop of plotting against Michael this whole time. She saw Coop plying Amber with drinks at the party, and he wants to know if she feels guilty because of the way Michael helped turn Megan's life around, or jealousy because now he's doing it for Amber. And Megan still hasn't figured out what's up with Amber, so Coop has to be the one to tell her she is an exotic dancer, or was. So why didn't Coop tell her about that before? Was he trying to set Michael up? She asks. And Coop asks if she really thinks that's required for someone as self-destructive as Michael. And Megan doesn't know what to think, except that the date is off. No one cares! You two are boring!
It's so true.
And then we're at the beach, where Michael is coming home to a dark and empty house. He wants to talk, but when he realizes Amber's not there, he just shrugs good riddance to himself. But then he sits down to watch TV, only to find clip 27...
Where's my TV?
I think we need to keep that one. Where's my TV?
Also gone, the VCR, the microwave, the cappuccino machine, the stereo, $1,000 in cash, and his grandfather's cufflinks. Whoopsies. And that's our episode. Let's close up by naming our MVP. Amber, made out like a literal bandit.
Yeah, true. I would say Taylor. She took a road trip, she got it in, and she got the information she wanted to her own surprise. So, sure.
Yeah, she had to get it in with someone who was pretending she was her ex-husband, but, you know, you take what you get in this world, and you don't get upset. Mm-mm. Least valuable player.
The writers. I mean, look, I'm gonna miss Craig because it was so easy to make fun of him and David Charvet, who clearly knew that this was happening and was like, you know what? I'm just gonna go be a pillowy-lipped pop star en France. And bon chance. I hope it went well.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to have gone okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just gross. Or just have him disappear like Chris. Why do we have to bring suicide into it? I just feel like that's unnecessary. So
yeah. Well, it's sort of like what we were saying about Matt in the call-in episode, where it's just like it's excessively rude to definitively kill a character when there's truly no reason to. And like you said, the writers really must have been mad. But I'm still going to say Coop, because I hate seeing all of his plans come together, even though they did, because he sucks and is dull.
Yeah, fair. Speaking of sucks and is dull, next time on Again With This. Jesus. Lexi's father tries to break her and Peter up some more. Taylor tries to use Christine to break Amanda and Kyle up some more. Jeff doesn't really try that hard slash care if Sam and Billy break up, and let's face it, neither do we. And Jennifer's all broken up about Craig's death. Initiate a breakup talk with your own retina by checking out our visual aids for every single episode of this podcast. They are at againwiththispodcast.com. We are on Twitter at AWT90210, and you can email us hello@againwiththispodcast.com. And get extra episodes and access to our Discord at againwiththispodcast.com/club. I'm actual baseball fan Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is Someone Else's Life, Tara Ariano, and she's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And our producer, David T. Cole, is out of balls. Talk to you next time.
Where's my TV?